Welcome to Book Reporter Talks To, a podcast from the Book Report Network, where we host in-depth conversations with authors about the books that we love. We know authors cannot travel everywhere, so we want to bring them to you, wherever you may be. Hi, it's Carol from BookReporter.com. I'm here with a very different program for you today. It's one that I can only do once a year, because what I'm going to talk about is my bets on selections, my Book Reporter bets on selections for 2020. Now, throughout the year, I read a lot of books. And as I'm reading, I'm always thinking, what would resonate really big with our readers? Which are the ones that I really think that are going to captivate them, a lot are going to want to read? This is by no means everything I've read, but it's ones that I've put aside that I want you to pay some special attention to, ones that I want to make sure are on your radar. So there's also something special going on right now. The books that I'm featuring today, there are 42 of them. Someone is going to win all 42, which you can see on the shelves behind me. And 13 other people are each going to win 4 books. The contest is open until January 4th, 2021, which is the Monday after New Year's weekend at 12:59 p.m. So you can jump on and take a look and say, you know, that you're interested in reading these books, and you might be able to win all 42. We've been doing this contest like this for a couple of years now. I love hearing from the winners throughout the year. People have been sharing like which ones they liked, which they were most excited about as well. So it's for us, it's always about that reader feedback as well. So I've got 42 books. Let's see how much I remember, because some of these I read back in January, which, as I say, 2020 is like a decade. So I'm not going to tell you all the details about the books. I'm going to give you some highlights on why I love them and why I enjoyed them. First up, we have American Dirt by Janine Cummins. You might think that I picked it because of the cover of the book. No, it's because of what's between the pages. Book opens in Mexico. We've got a woman who is a bookseller, and she has a husband who is an investigative journalist who's writing about the cartels in Mexico, and she has her young son. They're at a quinceañera party for one of her nieces, and while they're there, the cartel has figured out that he is the one that's writing about them. He shoots the family. She is luckily inside with her son. Luckily, except now that means that they're on the run. They need to escape. So this woman who had a middle-class life, who didn't think she had anything to fear, who felt that life was in her hands, is now on the run for the United States to El Norte. And what she wants to do is get to a land where it is safe for her and for her son. So a lot of the immigrant stories that we've been hearing through the years of people trying to migrate into the States has always been about people that were poor. They were destitute. They were running for many different reasons. They might have been victims of torture or whatever. And this is a woman who was living a very middle-class life and her journey with her son and what she sees along the way. Couple of things to note. We interviewed Janine a couple of weeks ago as our first Bookachino Live book group event. And she talked about how the word American is only used once during this book and why that really matters, because we think of ourselves as America, but America is a lot bigger than the United States. There's so much in here to think about. I read this with one of my book groups. People that were in my other book group, a lot of them read it as well. And it's one of those books that you walk away really thinking about a lot. Sold 1.3 million copies in the last 11 months. So you know that there's a lot to think about here. So we're leading with American Dirt. Next, we have Hidden Valley Road by Robert Kolker. And this was an Oprah Book Club selection. And I actually heard about this book last December at a publisher preview. And they were talking about this family that had 12 children. And I counted. The 12th is because the mother's pregnant. And of them, there were 10 boys. And of those boys, 6 of them were schizophrenic. They lived out in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and the family's ages spans the same years as the baby boom. They were from the first born in the 40s, and the last children were born in the 60s. And you've got these boys that have all these issues that are going on with them. And how is the family reacting? What is known about schizophrenia? And what happens to a family where 6 people have this going on with them? Bob Kolker is a journalist. He has done investigative reporting before, and the family came to him and asked him to research and write this book. It's their stories. Along the way, there's a great
listing in the front of who the people in the family are, so you can keep track of who all the people are. And interspersed is science research along the way about schizophrenia and what it actually meant for this family as different things were being found out about DNA and exactly what was causing this, and also how these brothers were all suffering. Not every one of the brothers gets to adult life. And also the two youngest people are two sisters. And what was the ramification on this life as well? When I interviewed Robert Kolker, one of the things that we talked about was why the family wanted him to tell the story so much and what it meant to them to have him be telling the story as well. It's a fascinating interview because not only did these people select him, but how proud they were of the way he told a very difficult story about their family and why they wanted it to be told. Highly recommend this, Hidden Valley Road. Next book is Hollywood Park by Michel Jollet. This is one of my favorite books of the year. It's a memoir. It is very different from any other memoir that I've read in that it's told in four different voices. As Michel's writing progresses, and the writing is beautiful in this book, we start with him as a young child, and the writing there is very simplistic because he's writing from a child's point of view. When the book opens, he's living in the Synanon cult with his parents. He doesn't really know that he's living in a cult. He realizes that they're a place where all the children live, and their parents visit them a couple of times a year. And to him, that's normal life. Until one night, his mother says, we're leaving tonight. Just take your brother with you and we're off. And he can't understand why he's leaving because this is the world he's known. This is what he's, you know, come to expect as what life is going to be. And he moves with his mother and they're on the run because the cult is actually chasing after them because they don't want anybody to leave and they don't want anybody to talk about what's been going on there. So they flee to California, and a different part of California. And then from there, they go up to Oregon. And while they're there, you start to realize that his mother has definite emotional issues. She's not really able to take care of these children. And he and his brother are really on their own a lot about what's going on in their lives. And he's trying to put together what's happening. So once again, the writing is from that child's point of view of how he's seeing the world and seeing what's going on. From there, he actually leaves living with his mother and moves down and lives with his father in Southern California. And from there, they go to a place called Hollywood Park, from whence the name of the book. And they go out and they watch the ponies race. And as they're out watching the horses, there's that father-son bonding time. And he's learning about life. He's learning about what it means to be a man. Like, what does all this stuff mean? Because he's had such a fractured life going on before. And what you sit there and you're in this world with him of his father's ill, like, you know, what's happening, what he is seeing in the world around him. And at the same time, he's trying to realize what he's really missing in life. And what it is really that security of knowing what's going on, like that you're going to be safe. And he's never really felt safe his whole life and how it affects him. And the book is just beautifully written, beautifully done. And there's something special about this book as well. Michel is a very well-known musician. His band is the Atomic Toxic Event. And they have actually recorded a soundtrack that goes with the book as well. Beautiful, like really wonderful music that will actually give you a different dimension when you're when you're reading the book. He also narrates the memoir as well. So if you want to hear it like in his storytelling and whatever, I highly recommend that as well. When I interviewed Michel, it's one of the longer interviews that we've done because we got into so many different subjects and we moved in so many different directions of him talking about the writing process. Because to him, it is not just about the storytelling, it's about the beauty of the words on the page. And what he did is he actually was showing me the bookcase of books that he studied, so many other memoirs and so much other literary fiction to try to come up with how he was going to tell his own story. And it's definitely infused in all of the writing. And I think that's what makes the book special as well. It's a very special book, Hollywood Park. Next, we've got Long Bright River, which is by Liz Moore. Long Bright River, it takes place in Philadelphia, and there are two sisters. One of the sisters is a policewoman, and she's on the force, and she is constantly looking for her sister who's living on the streets. And they've grown up and, you know, definitely are living apart at this time. And all of a sudden, she hasn't seen her sister for a while. So what's going on? She knows that her sister's been addicted to drugs. Is her sister alive? And what's happening? Because there are a lot of prostitutes there and women on the street that are being murdered in this area. What's happening? What is she going to be able to find her sister? But then at the heart of the book, it feels like something more sinister is going on. These two sisters had such a very difficult life growing up. The fact that one is on, you know, sort of the straight and narrow and the other one's on the other side of the tracks is really where the story has so much heart and so much love of what could happen in a family that's fractured along the way. Long Bright River actually has to do with the drug trade and what happens when people are using heroin. So there's a lot going through this book. There are a lot of different themes and a lot of different vibes. I think it's extremely well done. Next, we've got Say Next by Alexis Chaykin. I read this book back in the winter, and it was set in the Caribbean, and boy, it couldn't have been a better time to feel like I was there. I love this book. I think the packaging on it is just beautiful. So what happens on Say Next? Well, a family goes on vacation over the holiday break, over the Christmas holiday, down there, two sisters who are very far apart in age, and they're all hanging at the beach. Everyone's having a great time. And the older sister is slipping out and hitting the clubs and off the beaten track and hanging with the locals, as people are wont to do when they're away with their parents at a luxury resort. Let's get away and do something different on our own. Well, one night, the night before they're supposed to leave the island, that sister does not come home. And in the morning, the younger sister wakes up and says to her parents, she's not here. And it becomes this constant looking of like, where is she? What happened? Yes, maybe making me think about Natalie Holloway and what happened years ago in Aruba when that family was on vacation. Yeah, you've got some strange of that going on here. I interviewed Alexis, and when we were speaking, she didn't want to make it be any part of any one island. It's really the story about what happens after that. What happens to a family when this terrible tragedy has happened? How do you pick up and go on from there? So that's what St. X is about. This younger sister who goes home with parents who are grieving. She's missing her sister, and what does life become? She moves to New York. She's getting on with her life. She's older at this point. And one day she's in a cab and she looks up, and the cab driver has the name of one of the men that was suspected of being with her sister the night that she died. And from there, she wants to know more about him, because this murder was unresolved. Like, what really happened has been haunting this family for years. And what she wants to do is she starts shadowing this guy, because she's got to figure out what he knows about her sister. And she's going to put herself in all different kinds of places now to try and shadow him to see what she can learn about what happened to her sister. It's really, really super well done. And for any of us who want to get away right now, that cover in the Caribbean, yes, wrap yourself around that. Next, we've got Diane Chamberlain, Big Lies in a Small Town. This book is set in North Carolina, and we have a post office in North Carolina right around the time of the Depression. And what they were doing was they were bringing in artists to come down and paint murals in these places. And it was a way to get people employed. It was a way to bring some art and culture into towns. It was just this very, very special time of what was happening in this country. And this young woman goes down, and she drives down on her own from New Jersey. And she goes down and she's going to be painting this mural in this town. And it is supposed to depict what the town is about. And she's drawing all these, well, kind of little hidden things into the story as well. And people really don't like what she's doing. They don't like what she's saying about the town. They don't like who she's hanging out with in the town. They don't feel that she's part of them. And there's somebody else in the town who feels he should have been the one to paint this mural. He's an artist, and he's the one that should have gotten it done. So something happens to this woman. Nobody's quite sure. And years later, there's a woman who heads down to town down there. Her mission She's being, she was in prison for something that she may or may not have done. She's down there with an idea of trying to figure out, finishing this mural, figuring out, cleaning it up, making sure that the artwork on this is refurbished. And it's something that she doesn't know anything about. And so she's really on her own, but she's like looking to get out of jail. So this mission of to go down and do this is something like that she really wants to do. But as she's cleaning this artwork, she's seeing things and she's unraveling pieces of what really happened back when this female artist was down there years ago. So we've got big lies going on in a small town and what happens. When I interviewed Diane, she said that she was very taken with learning that this is something that actually happened, that people would go down and draw these murals and do these kinds of pieces of art. And this is, you know, all based on fact that way, though this particular piece isn't, you know, exactly where you are reading about it here. But by the same token, writing in the two different time frames and tying these two women's stories together, she just did such a fabulous job. So big lies in a small town. Next, we've got The Other Misses by Mary Kubica. And I'm not going to tell you much about this book simply because it's a thriller. And you know what? If the thriller, if I start to tell you and I start to give things away, well, then I'm going to ruin the story for you. So what we've got here is a couple that's moved up to Maine and they're, you know, new in the neighborhood. Everybody's like, who are these people? And all of a sudden there's a woman in the neighborhood who's been found dead. And they're like, what's going on? What do people know? What don't they know? And as you're sitting and you're looking at this, it's, wait just one second, folks. Where is the mystery and what's really happening in this town? These people are new, but by the same token, what are they able to see just because they're into town for the first time? It's really tightly done. It's one of Mary's best books, I think, in years. So we've got The Other Misses. Next, we've got The End of Her by Shari LaPena. Now, I absolutely love reading Shari's books. They're what I call one-sit reads. And what it means is that I'm going to start reading and I'm not going to be able to stop. And I did something different with this book. I usually don't read ebooks simply because I'm on screens all day long that I just have really just don't want to read on e. But it was the only way this book was available in advance and I was dying to read it. So Memorial Day weekend, the Sunday Memorial Day weekend, I plastered myself on the lounge chair outside and I read this from start to finish. What we have here is families moved to a town and they've got these twin girls, that are lovely and fun, except they're colicky and they're up like half the night. So we've got super sleep deprived parents here and they're living in this town. Mother's, you know, sort of getting herself acquainted to what's going on. And the husband has been married before and his wife died. And she understands like, you know, oh, that was sad that it happened, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden a woman shows up at her door. And she leads her to believe that he had something to do with her death. So who's this woman? And why is she saying that? And did he really? And there's a whole web of lies behind here. And she's threatening them. And she wants money. But is money all she wants? What is she looking for? So it's, who is this woman? How does she come into their lives? And what's also happening with the neighbors on the block? And who knows what about whom? And what Shari does is she starts you out and you've got like one path that you think you're going on. And then you're sent in all these different directions. And at the end of this, you are still going to be having questions of your own. So there we go. The End of Her by Shari LaPena. Next, we've got The Girl from Widow Hills by Megan Miranda. Do you remember the story of the girl who fell down the well years ago? Like, I can't remember what her name is at this moment, but I think everybody knows the story of the girl that was down the well. And for years, for days, everybody was tracking this around the country of what happened to this girl. Well, this girl was found after days of being missing in a river. And she was came up like out of a drainage area. And she has always been known as the girl that was saved and the girl that everybody is rallying around. And it's coming up on yet another anniversary of this occasion. And she does not want the media attached to her. She doesn't want to know anything else that's going on. And then something else happens that brings the whole story full circle for her. And she has to sit there and sort of be reliving what had happened to her all those years ago, something that she's been trying to escape. But also at the same time, she's going to learn some things that she really didn't know about that time. And all of a sudden, a lot of pieces are going to fall into place. So we've got The Girl from Widow Hills. And we actually have an interview with Megan as well, where we talked about a lot about where she got the kernel of this story and where she decided to, you know, shoot it in all different directions. So recommend that. Next, we've got What's Left of Me Is Yours by Stephanie Scott. Stephanie lives in the UK now, and one of the good things about the pandemic is I didn't have to wait for authors to come to the States. I could be able to Zoom with anybody and do author interviews. And this book was completely intriguing to me because it's about something I knew nothing about, much in the same way that Lisa C's books will take me into a world that I don't know anything about. And when What's Left of Me Is Yours, there's a young woman who her mother has been dead for years. And all of a sudden, she's going to learn what really happened with her mother, something that she didn't know. See, years ago, her parents were splitting up. They were on the verge of getting divorced. And in the Japanese culture, you can hire someone to seduce your wife. And as a result, when you go to court, you have a much better chance of winning, not only the money in your it's in your marriage, but also custody of your child, because a lot of times the custody is not shared. It would be shared in a love marriage, but it would not be shared in such a situation like this where it was very, very contested. So whichever parent gets the child, that's the one that's going to be able to have, you know, complete control over the child's life. So this man, when he sees what's going on with his wife, hires someone to seduce his wife. And from there, what ends up happening? And this is what this young woman is trying to unravel all these years later of what really happened to her mother and what really happened to her family. She's very close with her grandfather. She's got all kinds of little clues of what's happened, but she doesn't really know. It's about a culture and a time, something that I did not know anything about. And Stephanie is one to keep your eye on because she's a beautiful writer as well as an excellent researcher into this whole culture and what's going on. She was raised in Singapore, and as a result, she was always looking at things through like a different lens, a different, you know, world of what's going on. I'm looking forward to seeing much more coming from her in the years to come. And in the interview, she gets into a lot of different ways of how she constructed the story here. Next, we have The Last Flight by Julie Clark. And this is one of those summer books that I have recommended over and over and over to people, maybe because we're not getting on any airplanes right now. So here's the premise. There are two women that are in an airport, and they are both waiting to get on a flight, waiting to get on their flights. One of them is a woman who's running away from her husband. She's got it all set up. He is going to be announcing that he's running for Senate in the next week or so, and she absolutely does not want to be a part of his world anymore. He's abusive towards her. All things are happening that she just does not want to be part of this anymore, but she also knows she's trapped. She's trapped by his wealthy family, their name, and who they are and where their tentacles are all over the world. So as a result, she has a friend who's going to help her escape, and she is going to go to one city, and there, everything will be waiting for her to take off and go have a new life. Well, the night before she's supposed to leave, her husband decides to switch trips with her. He sends her someplace else, sending her down to Puerto Rico where they have a foundation. And she's going to make a speech and all kinds of things are going to happen. But she's really in trouble because her whole new life is in another place. So she's in the airport and she's telling her friend who helped her set up getting away that, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do now. And there's a woman that overhears her and she says, I've got an idea for you. How about if you take my ticket and you go to Oakland and I take your seat and I go to Puerto Rico? And right now, that sounds a great idea for her. This is absolutely going to be like she can get off the radar. She can get there and her friend can try and help her again and she can create a new identity. Well, by the time she lands in Oakland, the flight to Puerto Rico has crashed. And as a result, they all think she's dead. But why was that other woman fleeing from Oakland? And what's the story there? Scott, The Last Flight, had a wonderful conversation with Julie talking about this book, talking about her research for this book. She did some conversation with flight attendants to say that you actually could pull off what these two women did. Just very, very interesting. It's a quick read, and it's one that a lot of people have gotten back to me and told me that they absolutely loved. Next, we've got Two Truths and a Lie. Two Truths and a Lie by Meg Mitchell Moore. Interviewed Meg about this book as well. And she spent a lot of time at the beach, like with, you know, because you do things when you've got kids the same age, you're friends with the moms. All the moms are getting together. They all go to the same places. They all do the same things. In this town, there's actually a mom squad. There's a whole group of mothers that their girls are about 11 years old. They go to the beach together. They go to surf classes together, every single thing. So at the same time, a new mom comes into town. Nobody knows quite who she is. Should we let her into the squad? Should we leave her on the outside? Who is she? What ends up, she's running. She's running from something really bad in her life, and she's reinventing herself. And these mothers sort of don't know what to do with her. And at the same time, one of the mothers who's part of the mom squad is reinventing herself as well after something what happened in her life. So we've got two truths and a lie here. Who's telling the truth about their lives? Who's telling the lie? And which of these women are lying to themselves as well? Megan actually set this in the town where she is living, and it makes it really fun because all the places are actual places, the ice cream place with the fabulous ice cream that I'm dying to try, and all these places. And she actually put many videos and pictures of this up over the summer so we could actually see the actual locations that are in the book. It's a good thriller because you sort of don't know where you're going to twist with these women and what's going to happen. And yeah, there are two truths going and maybe more than one lie. Next, we've got Alice Feeney with His and Hers. Alice lives in the UK, and once again, it was another author I had the pleasure of being able to talk to about how she just put this really crazy, different threaded thriller all together. What we've got in His and Hers is there's a crime that's happened. There are two people on the scene. They used to be married to each other, and at either time, it's who knows what, who's not telling what, who's twisting the story around, oh, and somebody's mother's involved as well. And it's his story and her story. And both of them could be implicated by the person who's been killed because both of them had ties to this person. And I don't know, gosh, like back and forth, totally twisting it up. And she talks about exactly how she went through the process of writing this. I absolutely love what Alice did with this. I love the voice in it. And I love the way we go from his and hers, the different points of view, to see where she pulls together the story. So here we've got his and hers. Just remember, somewhere in the truth is between the his and the hers of the story. There's lots of lying going on, and who's really telling the truth? Next, we've got The Night Swim, which is by Megan Golden. And in this, the lead character is a true crime broadcaster. And she's come to town because there's a trial that's happening. And she is going to be reporting on this trial. It's like boots on the ground, like serial, like, you know, right there when everybody's going to be able to be telling the story. So she's in this town and she's looking and she's trying to figure out what really was the story of this murder. And then somebody comes up and tells her about something that happened years ago. Her sister was out on a beach and went for a swim and never came back. And what ended up happening? What happened on that beach that night? Who knows what in this very small town? Because somebody knows something of what happened to her sister. And her sister, well, did she really go for a swim and drown the way everybody said she did? Or is there something else that happened? So now you've got this true crime podcaster, the kind of person who's really trying to dig all the time to get to the heart of a story. And what is she sitting there saying is, what do I really know here? What can I figure out? I don't want to be involved in the story, but it keeps tugging at her. And what can she figure out for these people? Next, we've got The Guest List by Lucy Foley, which is a Reese's Book Club selection. This book is set at a wedding that is going to be a destination wedding. Remember when we actually destined to go any place and went to a destination wedding on an island that is off the coast? It's got a real rocky beach around it. It's not easy to get to. And you know that once you get there, the cell service is not going to be great because you know what? That's going to be part of the story is you can't communicate with each other. So what we have here is the bride is a magazine publisher. She's very accomplished, and she's got this husband who's a television star. So the two of them, this is one of these star-struck, beautiful weddings where the wedding planner has everything under control. No detail has been missed. It's just, well, it's going to be perfect, except for the fact that someone's dead. Someone dies. And who killed them? And what happened? And what are all these petty jealousies and everything that's happened through the years? All of a sudden, guys are acting like they're back at the frat house. And there's one woman that's there, and she was friends with these people through the years. And now she's like, who are these people? And why am I here? I'm not as rich as they are. I'm not as famous as they are. And I don't want to play that game, but who's going on and what is the real story? And what are all the secrets that have been hiding all this time? Guest list, very dory twisty, lots of fun, quick, brisk read. Next is One by One by Ruth Ware. And in this book, what we have is a startup company is getting ready to decide whether they're going to IPO or what they're going to do with themselves. It's a software company that has to do with music. And you can actually listen in on what celebrities are listening to. I mean, it's just this like crazy idea, but in these worlds, I'm not so sure it's so crazy anymore of what people would do. So these people have gotten together on this island for a team building weekend of skiing, hanging out and having fun. So it's these core people that have been with the company and also this woman that was there when they started that gave them some money that they actually really needed to keep going. At one point, she had the $10,000 that everybody needed. But she's sort of on the outskirts right now because she's not working with them, but she's still invited along on this trip because let's face it, she's got a stake in the game and what they're going to do. So all of a sudden, they're up in this chalet and they go out and they go skiing together and all of a sudden, one of them is gone. And then other people start disappearing one by one. They're being found dead. So who's the killer? Are they in this house? Like what's going on? Who's got the motive? What's happening? Ruth always sets her books up so that you're completely like, I'm not sure what's going to happen. They've got these locked door syndromes kind of thing because as a result, there's no cell service, of course. And this time she even threw in there's an avalanche. So now the house is completely cut off. We had a fabulous conversation. We decided we can ski together if we only do blue runs. She can do black. I will not make it down the slope. But we decided we could ski together and talk if we skied the blues together. She loves to ski, and you can see a lot of that coming through in these pages as well. I was reading this on a hot summer day, and I was freezing because she did the scene so very, very well. Now, curl up in front of the fire and read this one this winter, one by one. They're not being knocked off. You have to guess who it's going to happen to next. Next, we've got Lisa Jewell with Invisible Girl. So we've got this little part of London, this little swank kind of area where there's a guy who's living with his aunt who's, well, he's just really gotten kicked out of being a teacher at the school because of something he may or may not have done there. Then the next person that we've got is this couple that he's a therapist and she's a physiotherapist. And the two of them are living there with their two children. And well, let's say the psychotherapist, the father, was actually taking care of this one patient, and she really became enamored with him and wanted to know more about his life. So as a result, she's hanging around the neighborhood a lot, and what does she see? Well, all of a sudden one night, she's found missing, and she's gone, and what's happening? Yet traces of where that she was there are found outside the room, the house of the guy who was kicked out for maybe doing something or maybe not at the school that he taught at. So all of a sudden, this little tiny clustered neighborhood has become like a little web of secrets and lies because there's one girl that was hanging around the psychiatrist, knows a lot about these people's worlds, but where is she now? And what does she know? And what is she telling? And really, what is happening to her and her whole backstory as well? So here's what we've got, Invisible Girl, because she's the one that nobody was seeing, but she was seeing everything that was going on. Everything was on her track. Talked to Lisa about this, and she told us about the one character that got her started on this whole story. It's really, really fun because from there, that's where the whole story came out of her. Next, we have Don't Look for Me by Wendy Walker, which follows a very interesting premise. There are women who walk away from their lives. They just say, I've had it. I just can't do this anymore. I'm going to be a walk away. And this woman, Molly, in this book is very overwhelmed. 5 years ago, her daughter passed away. Her daughter was killed. And it was something that she had a hand in having the accident happen that she blames herself for. And the family's been totally fractured since then. And she just feels all just really at wit's end about what's going on in her life. She doesn't feel good about herself. And she's thinking maybe this family would be better off if I just walked away. She's actually thinking of doing that one night as she's driving. And she's thinking, I could just pull over here and this could end up happening for me. And as she does, her car runs out of gas. It's a stormy night. There's a storm coming in. And somebody comes up on the side of the road and says, we can drive you. And it's a little girl that's sitting in the passenger seat of the car. She says, we can take you, you know, we can bring you to safety, blah, blah, blah. And she gets in the truck. And as she does in the back seat, the door goes click. And as soon as you hear that click, you know, something is very suspicious and it's not going to be good for her. So at the same time as she was planning to run away and she's left maybe a note to the effect of what she was going to do, all of a sudden she realizes she very much wants to be found. And she's got this daughter that she's at odds with. And this daughter all of a sudden starts to take on the case of, can I find my mom? What's interesting is the entire time during this story, we're with Molly and we know Molly is safe, but her family has no idea. So we're following two parallel stories. So we're trying to figure out what she really has gotten herself involved in that the family doesn't know anything about, but they're going to try to figure out. When I talked to Wendy, it was actually a moment where she felt like she was having a walk away kind of an idea in her head. And from there, when she was sitting at this gas station is when she started the kernel that became Don't Look for Me. So there we've got that. Next, we've got Goodnight Beautiful by Amy Molloy. Oh my gosh. Amy Molloy is known for being able to do great twists. And let me tell you, I went back and read her book, The Perfect Mother, after reading this one. And this one, she even ratcheted her game up more. We've got a couple that's moved back to the town where he grew up. He is a therapist and his mom is having signs of dementia. And as a result, they're going to try and go visit her in the nursing home every day. It's one of the reasons they've moved back from the city to this rural town. He was also a player in the town. Oh, he was the one that dated all the girls and bedded all the girls, yada, yada. And now he's the therapist and he's their therapist. So all of a sudden you realize that in the place where he is doing therapy, there's a vent and people upstairs can hear everything that he is saying. So there's someone upstairs that's listening and what's going on. And all they're hearing everyone's issues and what's happening and okay, what's going to go on here from there? Your head is going to so twist on this one. Absolutely well done. Amy and I had such a fun interview because there's some parallels to some things in her life that she didn't know she was going to be exploring when she was sitting and writing this book. But there are places that you can hear and things that you can learn about. And what could that do if you've learned out someone's secrets to be telling the story? So we've got Goodnight Beautiful by Amy Molloy. And there's an homage in here to another best-selling author, and you'll figure it out when you start reading. Okay, next we've got Lisa Unger, Confessions on the 745. Okay, so we've got a woman, works in an office. She's taking a later train than usual to get home that night. She's also been spying on her husband because she has a funny feeling something's going on in the house. And when the nanny cam's on, she realizes her husband, well, let's just say he's having an affair with the nanny. So she's on this train going home and she sits next to this woman. And as sometimes you do when you're on an airplane or a train or a bus on a long trip, you sit there and sort of tell some secrets that you might not have really told anybody else. And she says, the woman next to her says, I'm having an affair with my boss and I think his wife's going to find out and all these things, which prompts her to turn and say, oh, and I think my husband's having an affair with the nanny. And I think that this is what's going on and blah, blah, blah. So they bare their souls to each other as they're stuck on the tracks in this tunnel. They emerge, they go home. She gets on with her life. And the next day, this woman wants to see her and she wants to get to know her better. And also something really crazy happens is the nanny disappears. So what happened to the nanny? What's going on in this story? Who is this woman that was really sitting next to her on the 745? And once you read this book, you'll never talk to somebody on the train or a bus or plane again. So there we've got this. Lisa and I talked about her plotting or not plotting of this book and how she pulled together the whole story. And I've known Lisa for years. Her writing just gets better and better with each book that she does. And this one is a really, really, it's a good story because you're also realizing how real that initial scene is of if you did tell somebody just too much. Next, we have The Girl in the Mirror by Rose Carlisle. And Rose is a New Zealand author. She's a debut author. This book debuted at number one in New Zealand. She has written a book about twins. And the twin sisters that are extremely, one is extremely jealous of the other. The one is married very, very well. She's having a baby. She's pregnant. And she has a stepson. She has a husband who's very successful and dashingly handsome. And she is up in Thailand right now. And the family yacht needs to get to the Seychelles. So the other sister is going through a divorce. She's not as accomplished in her life as her sister is, or whatever accomplished she sees her sister as being. And she decides that her sister has asked her to come up and do this sailing trip with her husband, her handsome husband, and sail this yacht, this beautiful yacht. Now, when I'm reading this book, it's the last day of my vacation. I'm floating around the pool and I'm dreaming that the tube that I'm on is a yacht. Well, first of all, we haven't been any place in months. And I'm just thinking about how this would just sounds like the most fabulous trip to be on. So she gets up there and all of a sudden the sister says, I am going to go with you instead. My husband's going to do, you know, something else. We're going to sail the ship, this boat together. Well, all would be well and good, except for one thing. The one sister is not really that great a sailor. She might be wealthy and she might have the great husband, but she's not a great sailor. And the other one is extremely accomplished. So they're going to set off together and they're going to do sailing in different like 12-hour shifts so that they can, you know, make sure that they're covering the boat. So as they're sailing and as they're, you know, moving along, all of a sudden the one sister, the one who's pregnant, the one who's married to the great guy disappears. She's gone from the ship. And all of a sudden the other sister's like, oh my gosh, like I could become her. I can take over her life. And there's one thing that keeps these two sisters a little bit different. They're mirror twins, which means the organs from one are on one side of one's body and the reversed on the other. It's what happens, which I didn't know, when the egg splits really late in a pregnancy, and this is what will end up happening. So if you really look at these sisters, they look the same, but if you look really closely, one of them's got a scar someplace that is very, very noticeable. The other one doesn't, but other than that, they're pretty much alike. So there's something else at stake here. There's $100 million fortune that is going to go to the person in the family that the father is leaving this to who has the first grandchild. Okay. So these two sisters are possible heirs to the fortune, but also they have a step family and that whole step family could also have this happen to her as well. So now this sister is sitting there thinking, I could go and pretend I'm the wife. And I could be with the husband. And at the same time, I could get the $100 million fortune. But remember, she's not pregnant, which means she's got to figure out how to get pregnant quickly because the other one's newly pregnant. And at the same time, there's a lot of other stuff that's going to happen. This is twisty and curvy and so well done. You would never think that Rose is a debut. She and her sister were both sending out to both work on books. And together they etched this plot out over lunch. We had so much fun talking about this, such a wonderful conversation. And when she was sitting there and she said that they ramped it up, like, you know, together speaking, she's already written a second book. She's working on her third. This is an author you want to keep your eye on, but you really want to start by looking at The Girl in the Mirror. And next, we've got Little Cruelties, which is by Liz Nugent. Here we've got three brothers that are not very close. They've got a mother that sort of pitted the brothers against each other. One of them, it thinks he's very, very successful. He's a filmmaker. The second one is a teacher and he's sort of come to everybody's aid during the years, but has really been helping himself as well. And the youngest one, well, he was a rock musician or a musician of sorts. He was very, very famous and sort of then fell from grace. When the book opens, one of the brothers is in a casket. The other two are standing beside them. And for the rest of the story, you figure out who's who. I really love this cover. I want to talk to Liz in January because I'm trying to figure out the significance of this because we've got little cruelties of what these people do to one another, but also the relationship amongst these brothers and what happens with them. So there's Little Cruelties. Next, we're going to be talking about some historical fiction. And we're going to lead off with Lady Clementine, not Clementine, Lady Clementine by Marie Benedict. Lady Clementine was the wife of Winston Churchill. And what this is her perspective on the years that he was in power and what happened to her side of the story and how she was the woman beside the man, not the woman behind the man, which is something that Marie writes about a lot, is historical fiction with talking about women who were very, very powerful, but often were not talked about because of the men beside them that really stole all their thunder. So here we've got Lady Clementine. I had a fabulous interview with Marie shortly before we left the office for the pandemic. And she talked a lot about her research for this book and how she came to write the story from the perspective that she did. So Lady Clementine by Marie Benedict. Next, we've got The Lions of Fifth Avenue by Fiona Davis. And anybody who's a longtime reader of the site knows that I am a huge fan of Fiona's work from her very first book, The Dollhouse. This is, I believe, my fifth That's On selection of her work. And it is set at the New York Public Library, which is just a fabulous setting for a book. I've been lucky enough to go on tours of the library. And there's so many like hidden places, but this has at its heart a part of the library that I didn't know anything about, which was that there was an apartment where a family lived back in, I believe it was the 30s, and the family lived in this apartment, and their whole story of who they were, and there's a woman there who really wants to be empowered. She's actually going to the Columbia School of Journalism, and she wants this mother, you know, besides being a great mother to her children, she also wants to write and explore and do investigative reporting. And she starts working on a story about something that becomes very near and dear to her heart. And then flash forward later, and because usually Fiona does two different time frames, and flash forward, and there's a woman that is working in the library, and she is in charge of one of the big collections. And these are historic works, things that need to be preserved, things that are great with history. And all of a sudden, some of the pieces in the collection that she's working on have gone missing. And what is happening? Who is taking them? Why are they taking them? And how does this tie to that story all those years before? You're inside the library, you feel like you're a part of the story, and at the same time, you're caught up in these two characters and what their stories are saying and what's going on. So Lions of the Avenue, it makes you want to get back and visit the library all the more. The lions that are outside are Patience and Fortitude, and I want you to know that right now, the two of them are wearing masks. So it's a symbol to everybody of what's going on in this country right now. So highly recommend this from Fiona. Next, we've got The Queen's Fortune by Allison Pataki. Absolutely love this book. And if you told me that I was going to enjoy a book about Desiree and Napoleon and that whole time period, I would tell you no way. But in Allison's hands, the history comes to life. And actually, this is an idea that was brought to her by her father, former governor of New York, who said to her, he was watching something on television one night, and he said, you know, there's this character, and I think you need to learn more about her, which spurred her to go on and write the story. And we had a fabulous conversation about that. And in this book, she talks about the first fiancé of Napoleon, and this woman that was really, he was enamored with, and he ended up not marrying. He ended up marrying someone who was very, very posh and, you know, just dripping in jewels and tripping in all fine things. But the strategic partner, the person that really, I guess, behind the scenes was so powerful in his life was this woman, Desiree. Now, she went on to become a powerful force in Sweden when she and her husband were exiled. And this is this whole fascinating story about someone who you know a lot about, but you really don't know the roots of her story and what happened all along the way. Allison's storytelling is so good. Her history is so well layered. I read this probably back in January and February right now, but I still remember not looking up from the pages because it was not only the storytelling was so good, but the characters so beautifully fleshed out and so wonderfully done. So you like historical fiction, you like a different time frame that you might not have tried before, highly recommend this. Next, we have The Exiles by Christina Baker Klein. And I confess to not knowing much, or if anything, about the penal colonies in Australia, and really where so much of the history of Australia and its people came from those who were exiled from Britain and were sent there on ships as prisoners. And in this book, we've got three women whose lives are intertwined. They're the three exiles. And what happens with these women in these prisons and in building a life for themselves in Australia? It's a really interesting reading. Christina got the idea for this actually when she was the exchange student there, and she was down there and studying, and she just said she didn't know much about this part of the world. And she wanted to go back and learn more. And we did a really interesting interview because she talked about how these characters each came to her and why she wanted to be able to go tell these stories. What's fascinating is just as America is sitting and embracing, the United States is embracing what has happened with us in the past with slavery and with all kinds of issues that are ones that people are ashamed of now, the same thing is happening in Australia where people are reckoning with what happened in these penal colonies. And people are now saying that, you know, they were descendants from the people who were sent in the penal colonies. And there was even a museum has opened about this over the last years. So the exiles, it's given you a very, very strong look at what it was like to be someone who was a person of means, even up in the London area, have something that you committed a crime, and you're either that or you were charged with a crime and you're exiled from there, and what your life would have been like during those times. So well executed and well done. Next, we've got another debut author, Fionnuala Austin, whose book, Bronte's Mistress, looks at the Bronte brother, the brother that we don't talk about as much, and what his relationship was with this woman, his imagined relationship with this woman. And what we're looking at is the powerful sisters, but who is this brother who was an alcoholic who comes onto this family, this well-to-do family's property as a tutor, and all of a sudden, the woman is wooed by him, or is she really putting herself into his life? And what ends up happening to her? Is she a strong person? Is she a weak person? Is she the one in control? Who's in control of the situation? And it's looking at what's happening with sexual mores during people during this time period, as well as shifts of power, shifts of where the game is really being played. Is her husband the one that's in power in this relationship? Is she? And then when something happens to her husband, what happens with her and her girls? And what is she doing to make herself a happy, but also exert some power and be in control? So well done. Nola is a huge Bronte fan. She's very accomplished about this whole area. It's what she studied in school, but she tells it in such wonderful language, and the storytelling is so wonderfully done that I'm looking forward to seeing what she does next. I had a wonderful interview with her about her research and where she spent time, boots on the ground there, trying to get the feeling of the countryside and what was going on and what it was like to be a Bronte brother during those times, where women were, let's put it this way, they were known to dress well, and they were known to plan great events and not much more. But when you don't want to be that kind of woman and you want to have some more control over your life, what do you do? And especially if you're known as Bronte's mistress. Next, we've got The Ghosts of Harvard by Francesca Serratella, another debut novel. Some of you may recognize Francesca's name because she's written a number of humor books with her mother, Lisa Scottolini. This is a very serious book. It's a book she worked on for about a decade. She actually went to Harvard, so she totally understands what happens on that Ivy campus, and the book is set there. So what we have is a young girl whose brother died by suicide the year before at Harvard. And she is now a freshman, and she's on campus, and she's determined to figure out what happened to her brother. And she's trying to get to know his friends. She's trying to go to the places he's been, take the classes he's gone to, just try to figure out what was happening to him on this campus that would have made him flip and take his life. Because he had issues that were going on with him, but he was always the one that the family spun around. All the action went around him. And now all of a sudden, wait a second, he's not around, and the family is kind of fractured and they don't know who they are. And it's really what happens in a situation like that with a family, that angst and the sadness that's overcome of everybody trying to find their places again. And the ghosts reference three different voices that come to her while she's up and she's at school. And she's trying to figure out, is she going crazy? Is she seeing some of the same tendencies that he has? Or are these people helping her to tell the story? So very accomplished for a debut novel. Looking forward to seeing what Francesca does next as well. Next, we have a book that I really don't probably have to describe to you because I'm sure many of you have read it. It's The Vanishing Half by Brit Bennett, and it's probably one of the biggest books this year. It was in the Goodreads Reader's Choice Awards. It was the book that got the most votes, and it actually won in the historical fiction category. What we have here is two African-American women who are living in a little town in Louisiana where everyone has intermarried in a way that they all can pass, meaning that everyone there looks white. And there are twin sisters there that have grown up in that town. Their parents are divorced, and the girls are, well, they're just ready to be out of where they are. They want to stretch their legs a little bit more and go, like, live a different life. And they take off at one point, and they go to New Orleans. And they're known as the girls that were missing from town. When the book opens, one of the daughters is walking down the street, and everybody recognizes her, and she's with a girl who is very, very dark. And they're like, who did she marry? What happened from there? Because this village that was, everybody was exactly the same. Why do we have somebody different here now? And more than that, what happened to the other sister? Well, we're going to learn that because she has ended up passing herself as white for all these years. And she's ended up with a very different life as a result, but she's always lived in worry of being found out. And what we're going to look here at a lot is that it's the different strains of race, the different colors of race, probably that's the best way to put it, different colors of race, and how they will affect how people are looked at and seen and talked about through the eyes of these two sisters. And their lives are going to come back together through their daughters and what happens there. So The Vanishing Half, I think this will make for a very, very interesting discussion book as well. We discussed it with my book group, one of my book groups, and I know that a lot of this has been resonating a lot on our website of people having this conversation. This is Britt's second book. Her first book was The Mothers, and I think that was at about, 4 or 5 years ago. So here we've got The Vanishing Half. Next, we've got, by Therese Ann Fowler, we've got A Good Neighborhood. This book came out, I believe it was back in February, feels like a lifetime ago. And here we've got two families. One family has living in a house for a very long time. It's a woman, she's split from her partner, and she has a son, and he is biracial. And the across the lawn from them, the next house over, now we've got a family that's moved in that is very, very new money. And they want, you know, everything to be perfect and new, and they're redoing their backyard, and they're just not worrying about anything, including the tree that's between their two properties. And they're doing all kinds of things that are going to undermine this tree. And there's definitely friction between these people. People are not happy because this is not their values. This is not what this woman's going on. It wants her to be raising her child with. And wouldn't you know, of course, those two children are going to fall in love. It's that Romeo and Juliet kind of moment. And these two children are, they're teenagers, they want to spend time together, and their parents are very, very opposed to what's going on. And there's a tragedy that happens, and what could have prevented that? What could have happened and done? It's a book that's very, very thought-provoking because you realize how really tiny steps along the way can become very big things that can fracture a neighborhood. So it's A Good Neighborhood, but define good and what's good to each family. So here we've got this book. Spoke with Therese back in the spring as well. And we talked about where the heart of the story came from and where, like, this picture of this tree is just absolutely the perfect image on the cover of the book as well. Next, we have The Paris Hours by Alex George. This is a book that is set in Paris, but it is during the late 20s. And it's that time where Paris is fabulous. There's fabulous art, there's fabulous music. But this is not a book about the fabulous people. This is a book about four different people who live in Paris during that time and are sort of circling those other folks. They're circling around. One of them is a musician. One is this. They're caught up in the world, but they're not the names. But the names are sprinkled and dropped throughout. And you're seeing these four different people, and this is all taking place over the span of one day. It's just one day in time. And the ending of this book is absolutely riveting. And I'll have you think back on everything that happened through the day so that those pieces could fall into place. And what's really interesting, when I was interviewing Alex, he said the book didn't start out like that. He was not planning to start from the, it wasn't wrapping up like that. And he was out with his editor, Amy Einhorn, one day, and she said, this is what the ending needs to be. And he had to rewrite all the threads of the story to get him to that point. But that last couple of chapters are this complete ride, because you see how everything that you've been reading all along has come together. So highly recommend The Paris Hours. Next, we've got In 5 Years. The significance of this book, first of all, that's written by Rebecca Searle, is it's the last interview that I shot in our New York office. She was there the day before we closed the office for the pandemic. And this book has a really interesting premise. There's a woman who wakes up one morning and she looks and she's got this life that she thought she had, and she looks across and it's, wait a second, this isn't the guy that she thought she was going to be married to. This isn't the apartment she thought she was going to be living in. And what has happened? And now we flash back of what happened over the last 5 years that would get her to that point. Because at the beginning of this book, she's getting ready. She's going out. She's going to get engaged. They're going to the perfect dinner, the perfect place. And everything is just falling to place into her life. And then what happened in those years in between that now 5 years later, she's got a totally different life. Totally different things are happening to her. Is she happier? Is she sadder? But it also makes you sit there and say how a flick of, like, you know, one thing changing or a couple of things changing into place, your life could be completely different. In 5 years, really, really slim novel. And let me remember which one. This was a Good Morning America selection. So really, I loved it because it was light and fun, but at the same time, it really made me think. And I like books that do both things. Next, thinking of light and fun, we've got Hello Summer. And didn't you always like to write in the sand like that when you were a little kid? I mean, I always like writing in the sand. So here we've got Hello Summer by Mary Kay Andrews. And we've got a woman who was working at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She had this really big job, and she is all set to go get her dream job working for an internet company up in Washington, D.C., where she's going to be doing investigative journalism. She's at her going away party, and she's all set to go, all ready to leave. And she finds out that the place got its funding pulled and the site is gone. And that happens with a lot of startups these days. So all of a sudden now she's like, what am I going to do? I've quit my job. She's broken up with the boyfriend. She's given up the apartment. She has to leave town. So the place that she ends up going back to is her family newspaper in Florida, where there is an older woman there that is writing a gossip column called Hello Summer. And all of a sudden now she's back in the one place she fled that she doesn't want to be at all. First night she's back there, she goes, she hooks up with one of her old boyfriends. They're out. It's late in the evening. They're driving home past an accident on the side of the road. And the next day they learn that it's a big senator. He's been killed in this car accident. Was he drunk? What's going on? And what was he doing on that road that night? So her little investigative journalism skills kick in. Same time she's trying to cover the story, her sister is like, are you staying? Are you going? You're going to help me run that newspaper in this forgotten town, or what is going to happen? Mary Kay before was a journalist at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. So she knows that good party by party well. And she also knows what it's like when you've got your chops and you really want to be able to tell a story. So here we've got Hello Summer. Next, we've got Big Summer by Jennifer Weiner. So in this book, Summer is again the mating call and the calling call. What we've got is a woman who was best friends with a woman who, his family had everything. They had money, they had the big house, all these kinds of things. But at the same time, this girl was very conniving, and she made a lot of enemies along the way. She was mean to a lot of people. So now, rich, mean girl is getting married, and who is she going back to be her maid of honor, which is this friend that hasn't seen her in years, who's now has a blog, and she's overweight, and she's happy about her life. She's feeling good about her life. She's a plus size model, and she's feeling really, really good, and she doesn't know if she wants to go back to this girl that just tears people down. But she's talked to him, and she goes up to the Cape. She's at this wedding, and the next day, somebody's found dead, and then we're all the clues of what happened along the way and how this ended up happening. So not only is this a beach story, it's a story of friendships torn apart, and also a murder. So you've got three things layered into this book. Next, we've got Florence Adler Swims Forever. And this is going into my family part of the story, these books as well. And what we have here is a story that's actually based on something that happened in Rachel Beanland's family. And I interviewed her and we had such an interesting conversation about this. What happens in this book is a woman is a big swimmer. She just loves to swim and she is getting set to enter the Olympics. She's going to go to the trials. It's going to be her year, her family, and everything's always revolved around her being the absolute really best swimmer. And one day she goes out and when she's swimming, she drowns. And the whole story is we are not going to tell her sister who's in the hospital, who lost a baby the year before and is scheduled to give birth at any single day. And she needs to hold off until the baby is big enough. So nothing can rattle this woman of what's going on. But meanwhile, there's a child in this story who could give the whole thing away. And it's how do you keep her quiet? How do you not know what's going on? And there's this family that's just wrapped themselves up in all these secrets of what's going on. So the title is very, very apt. She's going to swim forever because in everybody's minds, that's her going out on the water of what to do. It's a family story. It's got a lot of heart and it takes place in Atlantic City, old time Atlantic City. And it'll just take you back there in time and place. I loved hearing about her background on the story and her family. So lots of fun listening as well. Next, we've got The Jet Setters by Amanda Eyre Ward. So what we have is a family here that is, there are three siblings. It was back in February when I read this. And the family is going on vacation. They have three siblings and the mother. And they're going on vacation together on a cruise. Now, what's really fun about this is Amanda loves to go on cruises, and she decided she was going to set a book there because she's absolutely captivated by what goes on in this mini city or town that happens when you go on a cruise and how you can throw these people together and their family members that have been estranged from each other. They haven't spent a lot of time together all these years, and now they're on the ship and they're going to spend time. Remember, not a boat, it's a ship, and they're going to spend time together, and all the things that they're trying to hide from each other are going to end up coming out, including that the mother has told them all that she has won this prize, and that is the reason that they're going on this trip together. And she's making this family, who's completely fractured, come together to have this adventure together. And what they're going to learn about each other, and good and bad on this trip, but they're also going to come to understand each other more as well. But they're calling themselves the Jet Setters because that's the prize that she's won. She's now part of the Jet Set. And it's just looking at family. They're fabulous locations. Once again, for all of us who've been trapped in our homes, it's a great adventure, a great place to sit there and say, oh gosh, remember sailing up to a beach? It was just a special moment. Next, we have All Adults Here by Emma Straub. And what I love about Emma's writing is Emma's not just a good writer, but she also writes humor really well that weaves through the book. And all of a sudden, you're just laughing at these lines that she gives her characters that are so terrific. In this book, Mom has... she's questioning her whole life. She's got a secret she doesn't want to tell her kids. She's got all these things that are going on. And she's got three adult children that all act like children when they're around her. They squabble with each other. They're just all not getting along. And she, at the same time, thinks she's done a terrible job of her life. She's just feeling like she wasn't the best mother. She didn't do things the right way. And now she's feeling that she has to give all that kind of wisdom back to her kids, who are not in the mood to hear this from her at all. So she's got these three kids, one of whom, this is the really funny part to me, is the woman has become pregnant by in vitro. I think she's in her early 40s, late 30s, early 40s. And she's still having an affair with her high school boyfriend to the point where she is actually feeling that he is cheating on her when he's with his wife, because she feels that, like, you know, look, along the way, she was the first girlfriend. So that's, you know, that's a huge funny part of the book that's happening. At the same time, the brother is married with a young child, and that young child is bonding with her grandmother, and she's kind of sometimes the smartest person in the room, and she's kind of telling the shots about what's going on with everybody. It's great family drama of what's happening, because it's when you put, just like in the Jet Setters, you put these families together, everything gets messy. All the stories from childhood start coming out. And it's like, are we really all adults here? Or the children are telling their mother, we're all grown up now, but to her, they're always going to be the kids. So lots of great storytelling back and forth about all these people. And just, we're all adults here, or possibly not. Next, we've got The Second Home by Christina Clancy. Here, we've got a family that lives in the Midwest in the winter. It's either in Wisconsin or Minnesota. I'm not sure which. And I do know that they're different places. It could even be Michigan. I'm sorry, guys, it's the Midwest. And the significance is the second home is on the Cape, and that I'm perfectly sure about. So this family comes every summer because the parents are school teachers and they have the whole summer off. So the family has spent all their summers up at this fabulous home, which is fabulous to them because it's got the memories to them of all the great times that they've spent there. But there's also been a lot of friction in this family as well. There's a lot of including the fact that somewhere along the way, their parents decided to adopt a child who was a teenager as their brother. And the girls are like, one of them was actually dating him at the time. And she's just there like, wait, what am I doing? Like, you know, why is he in our lives? And now he's been gone and estranged from them for a really long time. And it's time to sell the house. One of the sisters wants to sell the house. The other one wants to stay up there and keep it. And then all of a sudden, this brother comes back on the scene. And what you're looking at right now is, what is going to happen with this second home and all the memories, good and bad, that are wrapped up in there? And the family is now sitting there and saying, every piece of dirty laundry has to come out. And we have to get all this figured out about like what we're going to do with this house. But why do some of the people love it and why do others not? And what really is the significance of having this home? And can they ever build their lives together? Or are they really just that fractured apart at this moment? So it's a lot of thinking about, you know, someplace that's been in the family for years and years. And now what do you do with it when you're in this situation where it's like, you know, stay or go? What do we end up doing? So very, very interesting. Good family saga once again. Next, we've got Monogamy by Sue Miller. I had the pleasure of interviewing Sue about this book a couple of weeks ago. And it was just fascinating how her characters came together and the story came together for her. What we have here is a couple where he is a bookseller. He runs a bookstore. He's a bookstore manager in town where they have fabulous parties. They're up in Boston and it's like everybody gravitates to the store. He is the like Pied Piper of books up there. They have fabulous dinners. When authors come to town, he's the one that's entertaining. And she sort of lives in a shadow. She's not as up in the forefront as he is, but she's like definitely one that makes the party like fun, but he is the life of the party. And the two of them have made this, you know, fabulous life for themselves. They've been married for decades now. He was married before and he had cheated on his wife and just so many things happened. But she's really feeling good because she's feeling like they're in a really good place. They're getting ready to have this fabulous dinner. Everything is really, really wonderful. And he has a heart attack and drops dead in bed next to her. She wakes up in the morning, he's dead. And all of a sudden she is grappling with, who is she? Like, what is her life? She's a photographer who hasn't done a show in years. She's just getting ready to have a really big show. And now he once again has taken over her life. And now what is she going to do? What is she going to talk about? Who is she? And at the same time, at the funeral, she meets a woman and she sees something in her eyes and she realizes he was having an affair with her. And all of a sudden she's shattered because this relationship and this marriage that she thought was so great is not. And it's this very quick scene and where she realizes what has happened. And then she starts to wonder, is it all a lie? Was the monogamous relationship that she thought that they had a lie? She has his son and her daughter, and they all come together and his ex-wife, and they're all seeing different parts of him. And she's trying to figure out, questioning her own life as well. Like, what are the choices that she made along the way? Is she happy with the person that she was? Is she happy with where she took her life as a direction? So this book has been getting a lot of great feedback from people who are reading it because they're sitting there saying, yeah, there's a lot that you know and don't know. And you really, unless you're inside a marriage, you don't know really what that marriage is. Next, we have The Heirloom Garden by Viola Shipman. Now, one of the reasons I love this book is because there's gardening throughout it, and there's fabulous flowers and fabulous plants. There are actually some sketches and drawings throughout the book as well of different flowers. And this actually got me to go out and buy, and I'm going to space what the name of the flower was, a plant that I'm looking forward to. It's one of the ones that blooms very, very early in the season. And I purposely went out to buy it after reading this book. But The Heirloom Garden is not just about a garden, but it's about two families that are going through a lot of pain. They're both been scarred by war. One woman lost her husband in World War II, and she subsequently lost her daughter. And the family that's renting the home next door to her, a home that she knows, is a father who's come back from the Iran-Afghanistan war and is battle-scarred, and his wife and children and daughter who are suffering because of the scars that have come back with him. So she's feeling this pain of war all over again, but at the same time, she's really thinking about what she could do for this family, what she could be doing to help them, because she knows they're at a really tough time. Their daughter's kind of adrift. She's young and she needs like some more stabilization. This mother needs help. And this woman who's become a recluse for years, so much that all around her are gardens that have like walled her in, is all of a sudden going to break down the walls around them just because she's coming to this family in need. The book is beautifully done about the story of the flowers and how flowers are bringing the people together, including this one little girl is just going through the fence and like trying to grab something and the woman sees her, which really spurs the conversation to start between them. It's a story with a lot of heart and a lot of soul, which is what a Viola Shipman book always has. It's steeped in traditions. The author is actually Wade Rouse, and he has adopted the name of his grandmother, Viola Shipman, in writing these books, where he talks about family traditions and values and things that matter, including flowers that have been handed down from generations. And when I interviewed Wade, we talked about the cuttings that he has brought all different parts of the country, from where he grew up down in the Ozarks up to his home in Michigan, and what he's brought to his home out in Palm Springs. Because what he believes in is there's so much in the heart and soul in the garden and in the flowers that really, really means so much to a family. So really looking, I love sharing this book. People who have come away from reading it usually head to the garden center right after. And if even in the winter, if you read it now, you'll be buying seeds online. Trust me, you'll be looking for more. The next is a book called Tiny Imperfections. I'm gonna put on my glasses. It's by Allie Frank and Asha Humans. Now, this book's got a really funny history for it. I was in Philadelphia at the American Library Association convention in late January. And I had just been at Winter Institute. I was seeing a lot of books and a lot of authors. And I dropped into this chat where there were a number of group authors speaking. And these two were so funny talking about their book. And it was just that moment where I needed some lightness and I needed some levity. So I walked up to them afterwards. I introduced myself and I said, gee, I'd love to get a galley. And they said, well, we don't have any more. We just have this one that my mother read and it was wrapped in like plastic. Her mother had wanted to preserve it. So she says, but we're going to give this to you because you sound like you're really going to go home and read the book. And I did. I started it that night because it sounded fun. And every once in a while, you know how you need a book that just will make you smile and also make you laugh at moments? Well, this is what it is. So what we have here is a kindergarten admission director. And what she is in charge of is putting together the perfect kindergarten class. You think getting into college is tough? Getting into the right private kindergarten has got a whole bunch of pitfalls with it as well. So we've got this woman who's a single mom and she is trying to go out and date at the same time. She's got a daughter who wants to go to Juilliard and she doesn't want her to do that. She wants her to do something more grounded and more substantial. And she's got her mother living with her as well, who was her entree into this private school because she's worked there for years. So we have these three generations of women, and we've got all these stories about her dating life, the things that happened to her along the way, the things that happened trying to get these kids into school. I promise you, you will laugh. There are so many laugh out loud moments. these two taught at private school together and in the teacher's lounge came up with the idea for writing this book. And they did a terrific job. And I really am looking forward to seeing what they do next. And last but not least, I'm picking this book to go last for a particular reason. This is This Time and Next Year We'll Be Laughing by Jacqueline Winspear. Jacqueline Winspear, you probably know as the author of the Maisie Dobbs mystery series. And here she's done something completely different. This is a memoir about her family growing up post-World War II in England. She was raised kind of like what we probably call today off the grid. She was, you know, picking hops. In fact, the picture here, when I interviewed her, she's 3 years old here. She's got that little scowl on her face because she's just been bitten by a bee on her lip. And she's carrying hops because she was out in the fields harvesting as well. Her parents didn't want any part of being in London post-war. It wasn't an easy life there. And as a result, they moved to the countryside. And what it was like for her growing up. And now looking back and getting to know her through her family or her family through her and what their stories are. And it's just such a rich, wonderful life. But I really picked this for the title to wrap up today as well, because believe me, this time next year, we all want to be laughing. We all know that this has not been the easiest year, but reading this, you're going to realize we've been through tough times before. And we've been through times where there was adversity and people needed to come together. And what happened during those times as well. And I'm going to go back to, this isn't the easiest year, but by the same token, we've done so many really fun things this year with our readers. We've done our Bookuccino live events every month where we started in July, which we just dreamed up as a way to give you a better connection to what is going to be out in the next couple of weeks, because we knew a lot of people couldn't get to bookstores or libraries. And then we did our Bookuccino live book club with Janine Cummins. We've got our next one coming up in January with Kent Kruger. And we started doing interviews and podcasts every week on video and podcast, whichever way you wanted to enjoy it. And we were just trying to connect you with more and more authors. And this time, as lonely as it's been and as crazy as it's been, we've actually felt more connected to our readership, for which we thank you. And that's one of the reasons that we love presenting this contest, where our readers can win one of, somebody's going to win this whole collection, these whole two shop shelves of the 42 books on them. And then we're going to have 13 other people win four. And it's our thank you to you for everything that you've brought to us this year. And also, just so you know, I'm already reading ahead and I already have bets on selections ready for 2021. I thought 2020 was a great year of reading. And I have to tell you, I'm even more excited about 2021. Right over there are two shelves that I'm planning to tackle very, very soon of books that I've just been excited about, seeing at previews and seeing at presentations. So what I'm telling you is, if you like this year for reading, next year is going to be even better. And we're going to be looking at even more ways to be able to connect you with the books you love. So thank you for reading. Happy holidays to all of you. And here's wishing for a great 2021 for all of us. Thanks to all of you for being a part of the Book Report Network. We appreciate your notes. We appreciate your comments. We just appreciate you reading the newsletter each week and making what we do so much fun. We'll keep coming up with new ways to get you involved with the books and authors that you love. And meanwhile, thanks to all of you and Happy New Year. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Book Reporter Talks To. You can read more about the author and the books discussed in this episode in our show notes, which can be found on our website, bookreporter.com. There are three ways you can support this podcast. First, subscribe so you never miss an episode. Second, share it or tell a friend about it. And third, rate or review us, as that will help people discover us. This episode is brought to you by the Book Report Network. Thank you to our producer of today's episode, Austin Rue.